I'm Gail Hunt, and I'm excited to bring you Fun Time with Cliff Goodwin, a rock and talk series of Cliff's Tales from the Road, a behind-the-scenes look at his rock and roll adventures, from his start in Worcester to 12 years with Joe Cocker and more, right here at WCUW. Back into the mind of Cliff Goodwin.
Okay, which is a dangerous place to be. Unsafe at any speed.
So when did you start going outside of New England and really going on the road? Was that with the American Standard Band?
The American Standard Band, again, Mark II, never left New England. We're jumping ahead to 76-ish. And again, I say ish because that's still 50, 45 years ago. We connected with Joe Cocker. And this is how that happened. Our manager was managing a studio in Boston called Intermedia Studios on Newbury Street. And he was funding demos that we were doing and whatnot. But unbeknownst to us, until we found out, he was in a band, a Boston band called Quill, who actually played Woodstock, wow, way down on the bill. They were pretty lousy, I think. But that's neither here nor there. Through that, this guy's name was Dan, and he knew Michael Lang, who was Joe Cocker's manager. Make a long story short, Joe was jettisoning his previous band, and they wanted a band of guys that could play but had no baggage, air quotes. And American Standard, we used to get in trouble in nightclubs because the manager of the nightclub would bring a tray of shots up and put it in front of us. And we wouldn't drink them because we didn't drink. Maybe I had a beer after work, you know, after the gig.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Johnny would, you know. But Kevin didn't drink. Derek didn't drink. Cowrie didn't drink.
Yeah.
We didn't drink. They'd get nuts. What's the matter? You guys think you're too good to drink with the crowd? No, we just don't drink.
Yeah.
We're you know, so we had already that kind of reputation that we were good players. I can say that, and they wanted no baggage. Mm. You know, nothing that would be a bad influence on Joe, mm-hmm, Joe Cocker. Of course, once they did finally hire us, Joe came and saw us at a place called the Widow McCoy down off of 495 and Hopkinton or Ashburnham or whatever it is down there off of 495. He obviously liked what he heard. And once they did hire us, they augmented the band with Bobby Keys and Nicky Hopkins, who were fresh out of the Stones. So, you know,
wow,
our being there with no baggage meant nothing because Joe now had two playmates.
Yeah, yeah.
Two serious playmates,
yes,
you know. So it was kind of funny that from that point of view. But that's when we first, you know, realized we rehearsed with Joe a couple weeks around here. A week in Worcester, a week down at the Cape, and then we went to Hollywood to rehearse in Hollywood.
Wow.
Which for someone like me, who had only been to Bermuda a year before to play in Bermuda with American Standard at this place called the Zodiac Club, this was going to Hollywood was, I can't even say to you what it was. It was like being in a movie,
yeah,
you
yeah,
know,
sure,
that you pinch you. I remember back then in the first few tours, we roomed together. What I meant, everybody had a roommate. Johnny Riley was my roommate.
Oh, God.
And he was great. You know, I had this bag of some clothes and another bag totally full of cassettes. I mean, I must have been bringing a cassette player and maybe 100 or 200 cassettes.
Oh,
so we were always listening to music. And I remember waking up one morning in this hotel called the Chateau Marmont, which is still a very famous hotel right on Sunset in Hollywood, looking out the window and going, Johnny, what the F? What's... what? How? Huh?
Yeah.
You know, it was whirlwind, literally. I mean, we were, you know, a few months before that, we were playing nightclubs to people who pretty much, we were sticking in original material because we had a lot, But it wasn't going anywhere, but we were doing the gigs. We were working, you know.
And you guys had recorded the American Standard Band.
We had recorded demos.
Demos, okay.
We hadn't gotten signed yet.
Oh, okay.
That eventually happened through the connection with Joe Cocker, because we were with Joe when we did a few tours. The first tour was literally, like, after he hired us and we rehearsed for, say, 3 weeks, we were off to New Zealand and Australia. That was the
wow.
first tour.
Wow.
We didn't, I mean, I remember just, like, I still look back on it, and it's, like, probably maybe, like, these people who won the lottery, they don't really know what hit them all
yeah.
of a sudden.
Your whole life changes. Now, were you married at this point? What age were you?
Yeah, Suanne. Yeah, we were married.
Wow. That must have been a big thing for her, too.
Certainly my partner in life still is.
Yep.
Held the fort. We found out eventually that how much of a blessing someone like Suanne is and was back then. Guys would come back from the road and they wouldn't have an apartment. They'd come back from the road and they wouldn't have a place to live.
Yeah. Sure.
They would have lost their apartment, or someone would have sold everything they had.
Yeah.
Your life, you'd hit the road for 5 weeks or 6 weeks. And in that amount of time, whatever was home was gone, could be gone. So, no, Suanne, yeah, thanks for mentioning that.
Yeah, and you guys had two kids?
Not till later.
Okay.
But she held the fort.
Yeah.
So I had a place to come home to, which is really, really, really important.
Mm.
Because keep in mind, it wasn't you sign on with Joe Cocker, and now all of a sudden you're working 24/7. You weren't. You'd be on the road for a month, 3 weeks a month, then you'd be home for a month or two, and then we'd go back to the nightclubs, and then you'd be on the road again. So there was, it happened simultaneously.
Mm.
American Standard continued as a nightclub act when we got home, because we still had to work and make money and do demos and all the rest of this stuff. So it was certainly a lifestyle. And if you didn't have a home front, you know, place to sleep and you know, go back to,
yeah,
it could be disastrous. Absolutely. So okay, we're ready to go to New Zealand. So, you know, okay, you got to be in the back then. And probably still to this day. That flight went from L.A. to Honolulu, from Honolulu to Fiji, and Fiji to Auckland. The tour started in Auckland, New Zealand. I don't know if they had direct flights back then, but they cooked up some deal with, you know, Air New Zealand, you know, the country's airline. You know, it was always back. I found out eventually, doing this for, you know, a long years and years and years, over a decade, you realize how these deals at this level worked. Let's face it, it's all who you know and all kinds of, if you could put a banner up in front of the stage, you got free, you know, you got complimentary flights and all, you know, it all worked. And at Joe's level, it meant, that was real money. It meant something.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, you know, going down to your local, you know, bar room in Worcester or, you know, you can't go to Price Chopper and say, well, American Sandal, put your Price Chopper sign up in front of them. Can we get free lettuce? It didn't work like that, but at the international level, it certainly worked. So, okay, the flight's supposed to leave at, say, like 9 p.m. So we're sitting around. We don't know. We don't know anything.
Yeah.
Because this is totally, totally new to us. It's like a bunch of crop duster pilots all of a sudden being told they're going to the moon, and you show up in Cape Canaveral or Cape Kennedy, and we'll take care of you from there.
Yeah.
So at about 8 o'clock, we're told, go be in the lobby. Okay, fine. There's someone there to, you know, gather the bags and guitars and whatever. We picked up amps wherever country we were in, because you don't, then you didn't travel with that much gear. Didn't make any sense. But power problems anyway. America was 110, and the rest of the world was different power. You know, Europe was 220, and down there it was 100. So I'm thinking, man, that flight's gonna leave. We gotta get to the airport. Well, we all got in the limos, and Joe decides, well, it's a long flight. We're gonna stop at Tower Records first. So we go to Tower Records, and Joe stocked up with a big, gigantic boombox, and bags full of cassettes. Okay, now we're on our way to the airport. Flight's supposed to leave at 9 o'clock. This is already 10:15. We get there, and keep in mind, this is 76 or 77, something like that. Back then, you could just waltz on a plane, which we did. Mm. But they had held the plane for us. So can you imagine, we're walking onto a plane of people that are on their way in this gigantically long journey, and they have been sitting on this plane
waiting
for already almost 2 hours, waiting for this bunch of nomad, vagabond, long-haired, leaping gnomes to waltz onto a plane. Joe's already half in the bag. Nikki, you know, it was definitely, my mouth is, we're looking, I'm looking, oh my God. Okay, so we get on the plane and we finally leave. We get to Honolulu, first leg, land, drop some people off, pick up some people. We find out Joe's getting thrown off the plane.
Oh, no. Oh, God.
Why? Doesn't matter. Big fight, whatever. Michael Lang, Joe's manager, has to stay with Joe. And they're going to pick up a flight, the next flight that they can catch, the next thing smoking, to get to New Zealand. Okay, we leave. Fly all through the night, land in Fiji. At this point, if you've ever had a long, long airplane flight like this, you're beat up, you know. We get to Fiji. We are informed that Nikki Hopkins and Bobby Keys are getting thrown off the plane there.
Oh, great.
Minor altercation from a little bit of, you know, imbibing too much.
Trouble.
So our road manager, his name was Hobie Cook. The road manager, Hobie Cook, has to stay with Nikki and Bobby. So now it's only us in American Standard. All right, on the way to New Zealand. Hobie says to me and Kevin, when you get to New Zealand, don't do anything but go to the hotel and wait for us. There'll be people there to collect you. Absolutely, no worries. When you get through customs, do what you're told. Go to the hotel. Stay there. We'll eventually be there. Can't tell you when, but we'll eventually be there. Okay, fine. Got to New Zealand. Got through customs. Now, everybody out there, you know what I'm saying. So you get through customs, they check your bags. They went through every one of my cassettes, by the way.
Wow.
Everyone.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, well, at that time, New Zealand had these very strange import rules. You know, they were very particular about what they would let in the country. You couldn't bring canned vegetables. You couldn't bring a used bicycle on it. You couldn't bring stupid stuff like that I thought was stupid. Who knows what?
Yeah.
Anyways, we finally get through customs. The door opens up, and every TV station, every radio station, every newspaper, the lights come on like we were being interrogated.
God.
And they are all screaming at once. Where's Joe? What happened to Joe? Is Joe coming? What happened to you? What happened to Nikki? What happened to Bobby? Where are they? When are they coming? And we're just like this. This is, keep in mind, we've been in this organization now for about 3 weeks, a month. Right, we were collected and went to the hotel, and to make a long story short, this is how it started. So in a day or two, Nikki and Bobby and Joe had already gotten there, and now that we start the tour in Auckland, New Zealand. That's just the tip of the eventual iceberg.
All right. That was great.
The further adventures of our fearless leader.
I'd like to thank Cliff Goodwin for this fun time episode. We look forward to hearing more next week. Tune in to The Drive at 5 and for our Rock and Talk series around 6 p.m.